back.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Tony. It's a very disturbing question. It seems to be sort of building up to the situation in the late 70s and early 80s in El Salvador in the last century, where the oppression, repression, attained such ghastly levels that people who were normally quite pacific and peaceful decided there was no option but to join an armed struggle. Now, I know the Honduran people in their manifestations and demonstrations in the street have been very, very strictly non-violent and non-aggressive, confrontational perhaps, but not aggressive. But this election could be the flashpoint where people say, well, there was a slogan, basta ya, enough's enough.
Yeah. Well, there are so many ways of looking at it. If you look at it from the perspective of the populations in countries like Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Guatemala, the solidarity movement with the Honduran popular movement in those countries is now preparing for the worst, and they're organizing to try and accumulate resources so that they'll be able to take care of refugees. Governments certainly have contingency plans to receive refugees. So the ordinary populations in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Nicaragua, the countries that border Honduras, do fear the worst.
Yeah.
And then if you look at it from... But if you then jump at it and look at it from a more intellectual, kind of geopolitical, analytical point of view, if you like, then if you ask, well, what's in this for the United States, which is obviously the main player making the sustenance of the coup regime possible, if you look at it and if you ask that question, well, what's in this for the United States if it turns to violent conflict? The answer is that in countries like Nicaragua, the right wing are completely discredited.
Mm-hmm.
And all the signs are that the FSLN government is going to win the 2011 elections, even if the right wing combines against it, because their policies have been so successful and the right wing in Nicaragua have been so obviously completely lacking any credible policies that the only thing that is going to make it possible for the right wing to win in Nicaragua, and the same can be said in El Salvador, is if the right wing in the region can generate an atmosphere of fear and terror. So, and if there's a violent conflict ongoing in Honduras over the next year or so, then that'll enable them very readily to create an ambience and an atmosphere of fear and terror in the region. Yeah, and Manuel Zelaya was absolutely right when he said that the United States could force the coup regime to accept a negotiated settlement in 5 minutes, because they certainly have the capacity to do so. If they cut off trade with Honduras, 80% of Honduras's trade is with the United States, and the United States announced that they were no longer going to issue visas to people from Honduras from today onwards. That's another example of their disingenuous falsity, because the coup leaders and all the business leaders in Honduras already have their visas. They don't need to apply for visas. They've already got them. What the United States should be doing is cancelling the visas, cancelling existing visas, not saying that when they're not going to issue any more. They should be cancelling visas. They should be freezing bank accounts of the coup regime leaders and their business backers. And in very short order, they could shut down the coup regime, but they're not doing it. Why aren't they doing it? Because they don't want to. So it's absolutely clear that if the United States wanted to prevent a descent in Honduras into political violence, they could readily do so, and they're choosing not to. What is the only rational interpretation of that? that they are happy for Honduras to go through that period of conflict, because it'll enable them to create an atmosphere of destabilization, insecurity, fear, terror in the region, that will make it harder for progressive governments like the government of Daniel Ortega or the government of Mauricio Funes in El Salvador to get re-elected.
Yeah, it's Tony. I'm just thinking in this. It seems that very much, quite critically, depends on the resistance, on the Honduran people, and how they organise themselves, and how they, things like if the repression keeps on growing, and it certainly will get very heavy in November, what sort of defensive measures can they take against this? Is there any? I guess, you know, neither of us in a position to know.
The people,
yeah.
The people in Honduras.
Yes.
People in Honduras.
Yes.
Well, they can't.
Yeah.
And they can't. They're completely at the mercy of the army and the police, and not just the army and the police, but also the paramilitaries that are currently being organised by the coup regime. Mm. And the murders of Pedro Magdiel Munoz. And the murder of one of the teachers, who were viciously tortured before their bodies were thrown out in the street to be discovered. Those murders weren't carried out by the army. They were carried out by paramilitaries, obviously attached to the army. What is happening in Honduras is that Honduras is turning into a kind of mini Colombia, where the army, the police, and the paramilitaries mobilized to destroy the popular movement. And that is what is going to happen. So I was talking not long ago to several people who are quite prominent at grassroots in organizing the resistance inside Honduras. And they're all living virtually in clandestinity.
Yeah.
Because if they stay out in the open, the authorities will come up with some spurious legal reason to lock them up and throw away the key, or worse.
Yeah, I guess they're probably as aware as we are of the implications of the movement and. You know, maintaining the struggle without sort of creating this, well, you know, would eventually, I guess, lead to a U.S. intervention if the struggle got too violent.
Well, and the U.S. is already intervening, because by default, as it were, they're allowing the coup. They've got a military base there, and they could shut that military base down. Also, shut down their embassy. There are all kinds of things they could do to put pressure on the coup regime. Mm. But by keeping open their embassy, by keeping open their military base, and carrying out the normal behavior of the normal routine of the military base personnel engaging as if nothing was happening in the country. Mm. And in effect, they're making very clear that they support the coup, regardless of the mealy-mouthed and deceitful declarations of President Barack Obama.
Mm. So I guess it really comes down to the international pressures and international support and doing what one can, I suppose, to communicate the realities of Latin America and Central America in particular to the U.S. administration.
It's just so hopeless. I just don't see how the situation is going to be resolved without violent armed conflict, with widespread armed conflict inside Honduras. Mm. I just don't see how, and what that means is. If that situation does come about, then it's going to turn into a battle of wills about who can resist most?
Mm. Mm.
Who can resist? Who can take most losses?
Mm.
Before you lived this yourself, Warwick, in El Salvador. You know what it's about. Yeah. It comes down to what losses both sides are prepared to sustain before they negotiate a peace.
Mm.
And I fear the worst. I think that that's what we're going to end up seeing in Honduras.
Well, let's hope it's not a tragedy in the making. I know you're very close to it, and we just try and keep working and make people aware of what the Honduran people are going through and what they're doing, and the absurdity of the position, I guess, of the coup regime and the United States.
Well, it may also be worth pointing out to people that it's not just Honduras, it's the whole region.
Yeah.
So, and if people are concerned about peace in the world, if people are concerned about economic stability, in international economic and political stability, and they should be working like crazy to make sure that the conflict in Honduras doesn't spin out of control, as it's very much threatening to do.
Yeah.
Because it'll affect the whole region.
Yeah.
And yet Honduras is a tiny country of under 6 million people, isn't it? And I've forgotten what the population is, is it?
Oh, it's around about seven, but a hell of a lot of them live outside the country. There's a lot of them, like El Salvador, a lot of them went to the United States. Yeah.
So it's a very small country, but in the same way that a very small country like Palestine can completely destabilize a whole region, And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that that is the level of destabilization in the region that potentially could come about as a result of Honduras descending into civil war.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for sharing those thoughts with us, Tony, and we will appreciate it here at Community Radio, especially here at TuneIn FM, if you keep us informed, especially round about November, where I imagine things will get pretty bloody torrid. And if you have the opportunity to speak to any of the Honduran people that you may be in contact with, you could just pass on the admiration we feel here for the way they've maintained that struggle and have done so non-violently and with great forbearance, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Tony. Look forward to talking to you.
Okay, thanks, Warwick. Yeah.